everyone, and welcome to Sports Community Podcast, episode number 18, with your hosts Joe and Steve at the helm. Today we have the great pleasure of talking to a legend of the local bowls scene, chairman of the Mount Martha Bowls Club, Mr. Ian Parsons, about the challenges facing bowls clubs in this new world of grassroots sport. We'll also be looking at the top nine places to recruit sports players and volunteers for your club in our famous top nine segment. So stay tuned and enjoy the show.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review so you can help spread the news about Sports Community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Welcome back, everyone. As mentioned at the top of the show, we've got a local legend with us today. His name is Ian Parsons, and he is the chairman of the Mount Martha Bowls Club. Welcome to Sports Community Radio, Ian.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, mate. Now, I wouldn't mind starting with you telling us a little bit about the Bowls Club, maybe just about what you know of its history.
Well, its history goes back, I think it's about it's over 30-year-old, the club. It's very well structured. Big membership, 250 members, I think, at the moment, around about 250. It varies a little bit from time to time. Very strong social club, social side of the club, extremely strong socially. And the bowling side is very good as well, but I think socially it's extremely good, very strong.
What's the split in membership? Is it 60-40 male, female, 70-30?
Probably 60-40, I'd say.
60-40.
Yeah.
And is it made up predominantly of the Mount Martha community? Do you get some folks that come from outside of Mount Martha that have been part of the club?
Yeah, some come from Mornington, South Mornington, mostly from Mount Martha, though.
Yeah.
Mount Martha area.
And I heard you talking before, just as before we went to air, you were talking about the community spirit down there and how much a part of that makes up the club. Just tell us a little bit about the community spirit that is down at Mount Martha, because it's very strong. You were talking about walking down the shop and not being able to get home.
Yeah, well, the community spirit there is quite staggering to me. I mean, I lived at Mornington for about 8 years before then. I bought a farm at Main Ridge. I was up there for a long time, and then we sold the farm and came back to Mount Martha. Now, community spirit in Mornington was very strong when I left many years ago, and when I came back to Mount Martha, I thought, oh, well, the community spirit won't be the same as it used to be. It wouldn't be the same as Main Ridge, but I've been absolutely staggered by the community spirit at Mount Martha. I've noticed it not only in the bowling club, I've noticed it at the football club, I've noticed it at the lifesaving club over the road from where I live. I mean, that is used every day of the week during the summer. The community spirit is incredible. If you walk down the street to do some shopping or do something like that, you go down for half an hour there for 2 hours, you know what I mean? Because you see so many people to have a chat to and have a coffee with, so the community spirit is absolutely wonderful in Mount Martha, and that reflects to go straight to the bowling club the same way.
So, yeah, I'd imagine there'd be a lot of members of the bowling club that have been there for a long time.
Yes, there are a lot of members there. Probably been some of them would have been there almost from the start, I would say.
Yeah,
I'm not too sure if there's anyone there from the start, but there's still a lot of members there that have been there a long time. Yeah, a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, and you have life membership and those kind of awards?
Yeah, life memberships. Yes, definitely. There's two more awarded this year, but they have to work pretty hard to get a life membership. But they are there. Yeah. You know.
Well, that's fantastic. And the other thing that I just wanted to touch on is, you do also have a very social side.
Yep.
You were talking about that before. During the summer, you have a Friday night social occasion?
A Friday night social, yes, but there's a meal there, and it's very well attended. It starts around about 6 and goes through to any time, you know what I'm saying? But it's very well attended. People who go up there enjoy themselves, had a wonderful time. They chat and talk about things. They talk about the game tomorrow and the pennant game tomorrow, and so it's just generally a wonderful night, yes.
If we take your chairman's hat off,
yes.
just...
I'll take it whenever you like.
No, well, as you were talking about before, you know, even though you're only there in, for seconds in club time, they'll quickly pick you out and give you a job if you're not
The best thing about being chairman, we've got the best car park.
All right. Well, if we just take off that hat for a second, and I just want to speak to you about your experience as a bowler in general, going back to your time at Main Ridge.
Yep.
What are the changes in the sport that you've seen in your time participating in bowls?
Well, I started at Main Ridge about 12 years ago, I suppose, and that's a little country club, a wonderful club. My mother played there, you know, many years ago. It's a wonderful club, and I think that it's just a small club, very intimate club. But the changes I've seen, when my mother was playing there, the skirts they used to wear had to be about, you know, I think about a foot off the ground, you know what I'm saying? And that's changed. Because people can wear a lot, they wear a lot of coloured uniforms now. They can wear shorts. They wear all sorts of things. There's coloured bowls now, which have coloured the game up, makes it much more interesting. I think that's another part of the game that's changed. And I think now there's a lot more younger people getting into bowls. And I think that's, you know, it's changing bowls a little bit. It's making it a more aggressive game, and I think it's making it a more interesting game. Mm. There's some of the changes I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. Great.
Yeah. Ian, it's Steve Callis. How are you going?
Good, Steve. How are you?
It's good. For those listeners that don't know where Mount Martha is, it's a little seaside village just outside of Melbourne, flanked by two rather large communities. So it has a very unique culture and a very passionate community about its sport, which is great. I just wanted to touch on your time in bowls. And delve down into where Mount Martha's heading with some of their programs. But what's the general age group of the bowlers at Mount Martha at the moment?
The average age, I think it would be 70, around about that age, just below 70 perhaps.
Yeah. And so Mount Martha's made a conscious effort as a club to attract younger bowlers?
Yes, they have.
How have you gone about doing that? What's the process there that you've gone about?
Well, we try to encourage we're trying to encourage a lot of schools to come along and play, get the younger people to play, and we are successful there. The Balcombe College is coming down playing now. They're coming down with some groups and playing there at the moment, and I think we've got one young boy who's becoming a permanent member down there.
Okay.
So that's a start. We hope perhaps to have more of these competitions in the future. I believe there's one of the clubs further down the line, down the southern part of the peninsula, is putting together a school group together, and if we can get this school group down there and our own school group up here going, and another one further up the line, perhaps we can have a school competition.
Yeah.
Now, that's what we're aiming to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a bit of work to do, though. I think one of the problems there is that the kids like to play, but it's the peer pressure group. You know, they come down to play, and if they're playing with a lot of people that are older than them, it's not quite the same. But if you get half a dozen together playing, you know, they'll come down and play as a group.
Yeah.
That's one of the keys to getting young people to play, I think.
So you've made a conscious effort to go via the schools. So was it a committee decision to do this, or has it just evolved over time to go down this direction?
No. It was a club decision to chase that sort of, go down that path, yes.
So conscious decision.
Oh, yes.
So then did you allocate responsibility to one or a group of people to give them this, like, a project, or...?
Well, there's one particular chap at the club, yes, he's taken that on as part of his job to sort of encourage that the schools to come and play there, yes.
Okay, so he's then going knocking on the doors of the principals and the PE teacher.
Yes, he's going to see the schools and talking to them and so forth, yeah.
So what's been the response from the schools when he's kind of knocked on the door in the first instance and said, we'd love to introduce kids to bowls?
Yeah, they've been pretty enthusiastic about it because I think it's, you know, they can come down there out in the fresh air. It's a good game. I mean, they can enjoy themselves. It's interaction with people. No, they're very happy about it, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So are they coming in school time, or are they coming after school?
No, school time.
Yeah, so it's kind of forms part of the PE curriculum.
Yes, I think it starts part of their curriculum.
Okay.
Yes.
So once you get them there... Mm. You'd always be starting from scratch and introducing them to the game and the rules, and how you've been going about doing that?
Well, there's always, you know, a few people go along there and they show them how to bowl, how to put the bowl down, how to hold it and how to deliver it, and tell them some of the rules of the game, and then they encourage them to have a game amongst themselves. So there's other bowlers there that go along and help at the time, you know, and the kids love it.
Yeah. So what sort of games are you playing? Let's start with... the primary school kids, what sort of games are you playing and formats are you...
Well, the primary school kids, I think they haven't had as much success there yet, I don't think.
Yeah. It's the high school?
It's the Balcombe.
Oh, Balcombe Grammar.
College, yeah. Yep. The kids are a little bit older, you see. And
yeah.
I think for the primary school children, you'd have to have smaller bowls, which we're going to try to get this year, actually.
Yeah.
Some smaller bowls for when the young ones come along so that they can handle the bowls. So they're fairly heavy, some of those bowls. And
yeah.
For a small child, they're just too heavy. So we'll have to get some small... We anticipate getting some smaller bowls this year.
So that's a learning that you need to have modified equipment for the younger kids.
Yes, you do, because the bowls are fairly heavy. If you, for a young child about 8 or 9 or 10, it's pretty heavy to
hold
those and put them down. But if you get smaller bowls, they're okay.
Yeah. And so the kids that they've come to the club, do you see their attitudes towards the sport change as they actually get more involved with it and have a go at it? And
oh, yeah, they enjoy it. Yes, they do. They certainly do. I mean, particularly if you get a bit of competition going. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's sort of a way with most people. If they've got a bit of competition in them, as soon as you start the competition, everything starts to work.
Yeah, yeah. So do you think it surprises them that they actually like this game, that, or they just come in with an open mind, or... How have you seen that?
Oh, I think they come with an open mind.
Yeah.
And, I think they went down there. It's just like a game to them, and it's not a serious game in a way, but they enjoy the whole interaction with the game of sport, you know.
Yeah.
They find it's just another sport.
Yeah, yeah. Let's be honest, Joe, it's not maths and English. That's
they're out of the schoolrooms, out of the classrooms, yes.
Yeah. So how many times would they be coming into the club and playing kind of...
I think about last year. I think probably a couple of times a week there were for a while, yeah.
Gee, that's good, isn't it? So that's enough time to get a real connection with the people or the kids and some of the volunteers at the club, and also the club and the school and that sort of thing.
Well,
so
I do. Well, see, we've picked up one young fella already who's going to be playing there, so on a fairly permanent basis, I think. So, certainly it's starting to work, yes.
So
it takes time to do these things.
Oh, definitely. And so you were touching on before about... The kids love to play with kids. There's nothing...
Yes, I think they do. Yeah.
All the research says that exact same thing. So other clubs around the region connecting and creating kind of a junior program is really important to the long-term sustainability of this sort of program, would you say?
Oh, definitely. I think that's right. If we could get, say, 3 or 4 teams, playing a competition, I think it'd be marvellous. But at the moment, That's
a long way,
but probably will happen. I do believe there's a club down the Southern Peninsula who is trying to do the same thing, and I've got a feeling one of the clubs might be Mornington Civic or someone else might be doing something different. I'm not sure, but yes, it needs about 3 or 4 teams. Even 2 would be enough just to get a bit of competition going.
Yeah.
But over a period of time, if you keep working at it, I think that would happen.
Yeah,
and it'd be great actually. Kids love it.
Yeah,
when they get going. I mean, there's been young kids started to play at 14 and 15, and they've gone on to be club champions within a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then they continue on to play in the big time. You know, some have gone on to play for the state. I think the Mount Eliza boy did that.
Yeah, well, I just saw in the recent Commonwealth Games team that the average age of the ladies' team is 27, and the average age is 34 for the men's team.
That's
so, so it's the elite side is very much a young person's sport these days, isn't it?
It certainly is. Yeah, it's a different game too. They play a slightly different game. It's a much more aggressive game, but it's a different game. But it's a very interesting game. I find it very exciting, actually.
Yeah,
bowls is not boring.
No, I must admit, Joe, and if I can virtually tell a story about my first experience with bowls, it was only a year ago when we started working with Bowls Victoria in putting together the training, and we'd just done 3 or 4 days of being at a really heavy duty conference. And there was the state championships at Bendigo East, I think it was, last year. And I really didn't want to go. And the alarm went off at 4 o'clock in the morning, and I was lying in bed, and I thought, I really do not want to go. Anyway, I got in the car, drove to Bendigo, big brick fence like a lot of the old clubs do, and I thought, oh, I really don't want to walk through the gate. I walked in, and there's all these people playing a really competitive sport in an environment where they're socialising and talking to each other, and it was 11 o'clock in the morning, and few people had already had a first drink. So I thought, this is actually not a bad sport, Joe. And since then, we've learned a lot about bowls, and I love it. And it's interesting working with the bowls clubs as we're doing. And Joe Ian's been an attendee at the training that we've talked about.
Bowls is people misunderstand bowls. Bowls is a very exciting game.
It is.
Depends the standards you get to play, but if you're playing at a pretty high standard, the game is very challenging, and it can be very aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't matter what age some of these guys are to start to play bowls. If they've been a competitive sportsman,
yeah,
it never leaves them. That wanting to win, I'm sure you'd be the same, actually, if you played bowls. It's a very competitive sport. And
cool. Actually, as we've been doing the training, Ian, it's been really, really interesting we ask a question. We say, how many people in the room of bowls clubs have played a competitive sport before bowls? And about 90%, more than 90% of people, bowls is their second or third competitive sport in their lifetime. Yeah. So it's a really competitive environment as well as being social, isn't it?
Oh, it sure is. I mean, depends on the person themselves.
Sure.
I mean, I've seen people there that come, they just want to play social bowls.
Yeah.
Right, that's fine.
Yeah.
But there are people who've played a lot of sport and they just can't help themselves. They just have to want to play well, and they like to win. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but they, a bit like a lot of sports, some of them are lovely people off the ground. When they step over the white line, they get white line fever. I mean, not quite the same as they're playing football, but they just love to win.
Yeah,
that's what makes the sport good.
Yeah,
you've got to have
those
people in the sport to make it interesting.
Yeah, and the casual bystander looking over the fence or through the fence doesn't see that side of it until they cross over the fence.
I would never have seen that side of it.
No, it's great.
Unbelievable.
Show.
So it doesn't involve sledging, for example? Or?
Oh, no, not actual sledge, but body language goes a long way.
Wow.
I must admit, I was at the Bendigo Bowling Club on the weekend. No, Eagle Hawk, sorry. And I saw a letter from 2008 from the CEO of Bowls, Peter Hanlon at the time, saying, it's come to our attention that there's been a little bit of unsportsmanlike behaviour on the greens and you might want to tone it down a little bit. So that gives you some idea. But
99% of it's very good. But yeah. I mean, but you like that bit of competition anyway. You like bit of attitude. It's an attitude
right.
in the game. It makes the game a bit more spicy.
Yeah, and I think that's something that maybe a lot of our listeners out there, the younger brigade, might not realise that, you know, if you're looking for a potential sport and you're discounting bowls because you think it's just something that you go along and it's not that competitive, it sounds like you couldn't be further from the truth. So if you want a competitive outlet, it might be a really good game for you.
Oh, absolutely, Joe. And also, the mission of bowls is bowls, a sport for life. So it's clearly the sport doesn't think it's for one group or another group. But Ian, that kind of leads into my next kind of topic is one group and another group. One of the magnificent things about bowls is it's so inclusive for all abilities, for all genders, for all ages. And Mount Martha is starting the journey of inviting people with disabilities from the Mount Martha community to the club. Do you want to take us through how the club even got to that position and how you started that journey?
Oh, well, we realised there are people with disabilities in the community. I mean, in every community there's people with disabilities. But so we've made a point of welcoming those people to the club, you know, and if they've got a disability, we try to work around that disability. You know, there's the arms that they can use to, if they've got bad knees, they've got bad backs, they've got other problems.
Yeah.
Especially that arm keeps those mechanical arms keeps people bowling for a long time, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people have to give it away.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for that mechanical arm, and they continue to play, and they play extremely well. To be honest, they're a damn nuisance half the time because they're too good.
They're too good, yeah.
But, you know, I mean, sometimes you feel like wrapping it around their head, but I mean... but
not competitive, are we?
No, there's that competitive side that we were talking about.
But it's true, I mean, it really is true. That's the way it goes. I mean, but it does keep people bowling for a long time.
Yeah. And what about... wheelchairs. Are wheelchairs allowed on the
ground?
There
are wheelchairs used. We haven't got any at Mount Martha because we haven't got anyone who requires one. But
yep.
I know at Mount Mornington there is a very good friend of mine who's been using one for many, many years. He goes down. They've got a ramp that runs down to onto the green. And he can get out of that wheelchair and he's got a support.
Yes.
Which he can support and bowl. He bowls very well. But he's been doing that for many, many years. So it's kept him going. Well, I think he's probably been using that for about 10 years, I would say.
Yeah,
he's still going. So there's certainly that. We haven't got anyone at Mount Martha at the moment. But if we did, we'd get a ramp made and they would be able to use it, yes.
Yeah. So there's no concept of wheelchairs not being allowed on the green or anything like that?
No, they can be used on the green. They have to have a slightly bigger wheels on the
to
protect the green. And on synthetic greens, they're probably better than grass greens because the grass greens, if they're wet, you know.
Yeah, there's a bit of weight.
But the wider wheels give them, you know, they can...
Same as golf buggies.
Same sort of thing.
Yeah.
They are used, but as I said, Mount Martha at the moment hasn't got anyone like that.
Okay. So now that you've decided that you're going to proactively seek out community groups with disabilities that may like to use your club, what sort of groups or people with disabilities have you reached out to initially? Or
well, one of the chaps down there has approached three organisations on the peninsula. He's approached, but I don't think he's had much success getting information back from at the moment. I was only speaking about that the other day. So there hasn't been much come back from them, but it doesn't matter what sort of disability they've got.
No.
If they can come along, we'll look after them. It's as simple as that. We'll find a way to them to play bowls.
So whether you have to modify it a little bit
we would. Yes, yeah. We'll find a way. I mean, it's a very strong community club down there. And I mean, it's anyone that comes along is welcome, and we make sure that they enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Fantastic. So what's the youngest bowler you've got there? What's the age of the youngest bowler?
Well, this youngest guy at the moment who just joined this year, I think he's about 12.
Wow.
And we go from there. Where would we go, we think? We've just got a couple of 35-year-olds.
Yeah.
I think the problem there is for younger people to bowl, most of the young people in that age group are busy with their families.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And most bowlers is played, you know, during the week, and then the Saturday pennant and Sunday when they play. But one of the problems there is I think a lot of younger people would play bowl. They play a lot of younger people play in Melbourne. But a lot of younger people would play bowls if they had access to the club of a different time. So over night time with lights forth, they could come up there and start practicing playing bowls then. And we're working on that now to get a synthetic green and some lights at the club so that we can attract that age group.
Oh, and I think we've seen that in a lot of sports. You know, 2020 cricket has reinvigorated that 16 to 22-year-old group where cricket was traditionally losing their players, where they can come and play cricket on a Friday night for 2 or 3 hours and then go out with their friends. You know, you can get the best of both worlds because the game molds around the needs of the participants. And I think it's going to be interesting. In my understanding, in the coming weeks or months, bowls are going to release their version of 2020, which we're calling Jack Attack, I think it is.
Right,
do you know much about Jack Attack?
Not much about it, no, but I know it's they had a bit of it last year, some form of it last year.
Yeah.
It's pretty popular. I didn't see it. I don't know much about it.
Yeah, short form game that you can finish it in an hour and very social sort of setting. So I think that's going to make a tremendous difference to bowls. Yeah.
And I know that there's a lot of clubs in Melbourne do play night bowls now, and it does attract a lot of younger people.
Absolutely.
And that's the way it's going, I think, and that's the way we'll go in the future, I believe.
Yeah. So has Matt Martha got the lights? Or
no, we're working on getting the lights. We were hoping to have a synthetic green and lights at the club within about, if not next season, the following season.
Probably wow.
Not this coming year, but the following
2016.
Season.
2016.
We're hoping to get that,
2015,
do some work on that in the next 6 months.
So just for us that aren't involved in the facility side of it, what's a green cost these days, and what's the lighting cost?
Synthetic?
Yeah.
Well, currently the project we've got looking at the moment with synthetic green and lights, about $270,000.
Wow.
That's a fair bit of money.
It's a lot of money for a local sports club, isn't it?
It is. Still, a lot of people get pleasure out of it, and you spread it over, say, 250 members over 10 years. It's not a lot of money.
No. No.
You've got to look to the future. You've got to look where greens are going. I think in Melbourne, 40% of the greens up in Melbourne, I think, are synthetic.
Synthetic, yeah.
That seems to be the way it's going.
Yeah.
So that's we've got to look at that.
And particularly
if we stand still, we'll go backwards, as simple as that.
Yeah, yeah. And particularly given that in Melbourne, comparative to other parts in the country, there's such mild winters, so we can often play all the way through if we wanted to, whereas greens you can't necessarily.
No, with synthetic greens you can play right through the winter.
Yeah,
that's right. That's one of the advantages of it, particularly with lights too. You see, the game never finishes.
So for a project of that magnitude, you must be working very closely with the council.
Yep.
And how are you picking up that as chairman?
We're applying for a grant from the council
and through the Victorian facilities.
Yeah, that's right. That's
where major facilities.
We've applied for that grant. We've got an application for that now. We won't know about the result of that for another. Well, we won't know the final result till September.
Yeah.
But we're hoping that we'll have some success there, which will give us a bit more money to sort of towards the project, which will soften the you know,
the cost of members.
The cost of members and so forth, yeah.
How long, like grants is one thing that our listeners and on our website people just, it's one of our biggest topics. How long did it take you to put together that grant application for the that?
Well, our first submission went in. We had about 4 weeks to put that submission together.
Yeah.
There was a fair bit involved in the submission. That went into through the state, through the local council under the state, I suppose, but. Then we expect to get an answer on that first submission back within about a couple of weeks, 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah.
If we're successful there, then we have to go to another stage.
Yes.
And then if we're successful there, I think we'll find out if we've had success around about September, late September.
Wow. We're
praying we will.
Yeah. Did you have a subcommittee kind of work on that?
Yes, we did. We had to have a subcommittee and they had to work very hard to get all the information together. But I think we put in a pretty good submission. A lot of information on it.
So the sort of information that you had to collect would be like things like the history of your club and quotes for the work and
financials.
Yep.
Financials. The
community partnership type.
Yes, a lot of community involvement. Yes, that was a big part of it.
Yes.
Very big part of it, actually, and because we're such a strong community club, I think that should help us.
Yeah. And so what other community groups have you got running through the club, apart from the bowling side of the club?
Well, we have barefoot bowls.
Sure, social,
and that runs for about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And then we have corporate bowls.
Yeah.
That runs for about 6 weeks. That's very popular.
Yeah.
Extremely popular.
Yeah,
People are playing that, want to extend it next year.
Oh, good.
And if we had lights and synthetic green,
you would have been able to
see,
yep.
But those corporate people love it.
Mm.
They've said they'd like the season to last longer.
Yep.
And then we've got one of the days this year we've got is a day for people with arms. You know,
so yes,
with the extended arms to that we've got a 1 day competition for that. I think it's in March.
Yeah,
coming season.
Fantastic.
So that's there too.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Plus, you got the school programs and
school program. Yep. It's pretty. The whole club is wide open for the whole community, and that's what we're working at.
Yeah, fantastic, Joe. Well, that's been an amazing look at how one club is starting to broaden their horizons apart from their traditional away from their traditional perceived market to involve everyone from primary school kids to secondary school kids to the ladies to people with disabilities to the whole community. So Ian, thank you so much for your time. Thank you for coming into the studio. It's really, really cool, isn't it, Joe, to be able to interview someone face-to-face?
Absolutely. A big change and makes a big difference from just looking at your dial, I've got to say.
Well, particularly my dial over the last couple of days, Joe, where it's somehow or other got Bell's palsy. It's not the best time to be looking at it, but not to worry.
All right, big thank you to the Chairman of the Mount Martha Bowls Club, Ian Parson. Thank you, Ian.
Thanks for the opportunity.
No worries,
thanks
mate.
Very much.
No, thanks for coming in, Ian. It's been brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Community Radio with your hosts, Joe Novella and Steve Pallas. If you've missed a couple of our episodes, why not visit our website at www.sportscommunity.com.au, and there you'll find all our previous podcasts that you can download. And while you're there, give us a review, so you can help spread the news about sports community and its services to the grassroots sports clubs. Okay, it's time again for our famous top nine, and this week's top nine is the top nine places to recruit players, Steve. So, number one is junior clubs recruit from schools.
Yeah, Joe, it certainly is, and it's amazing how often that in recruiting the obvious gets overlooked. And schools are the most logical place for junior clubs to form really strong relationships, so that it makes it easy for players to be for clubs to recruit from the schools. So it becomes more of a process than anything else. So that may mean that the club gets involved in the school sports program, or the kids come to your club and try the sport, depending on what the sport is. And to be actively involved in the school makes it a lot easier for the school to be able to promote the club. But then also looking at the resources of the school. So you've obviously got the PE teachers who are good advocates for different sports in their community, but you've also got One of the secret weapons of sports recruiting, Joe, is the school newsletter. Most people don't realise, or they don't think about the fact that it's actually the parents that make the majority of the decisions about where their kids, what sports their kids will play. And so I remember my mum asking me, cricket I played because my father was a player, but Aussie rules I joined because my mum read in the school newsletter that there was a registration day at the local club, and she said, would you like to play? So I said yes. So Aussie Rules got a 20-year participant, not a very good one, I might add, Joe, but a 20-year participant just because there was an ad in the school newsletter.
We need all types of players, I've been told, Steve, and I'm sure you would have just fitted in nicely. Now, number two, in our top nine places to recruit players, we talked junior clubs for number one. Now we're talking senior club, recruit from the junior clubs.
Well, again, Joe, just, you know, one of the things we like to do is to state the bleeding obvious. And it is amazing how often senior clubs just assume that players will come through from the junior clubs. But it's just not necessarily the correct assumption. So, again, senior clubs need to spend a lot of time building the relationships with the junior clubs and making that really simple pathway from the junior clubs to the senior clubs in what is a very daunting time for young people coming into and playing in adult competitions. Interestingly, though, Joe, it's not just the players we're talking about here. We're talking about their parents. You know, we can recruit the parents out of the senior club and to let them continue the journey with their kids we can recruit the parents out of the junior club and let them continue the journey into the senior club, and they then become supporters and members and volunteers over time and key people within the senior club, which is just following the recruitment of their children into the senior club.
Number three in our top nine places to recruit players is partnerships with other sports clubs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in a very, very obvious... Oh, sorry, not an obvious example, but it's one that we think often that we really shouldn't be trying to form relationships with other clubs. Our players are our players and their players are their players, and we won't try and steal them or anything like that. But if we're a sport like bowls or golf or sailing, then the research shows that 90%, nearly 90% of our players have played competitive sport all their life. And so bowls and golf and sailing might be their second or third competitive sport. So in that instance, it makes a lot of sense for sports clubs to be forming relationships with each other. And so bowls clubs, for instance, might offer their local football club or their local netball club the opportunity to use the greens for social functions and fundraising events, which is good for the one club because it raises money, but it's good for the other club because they get to new participants get to see the club and get introduced to the club, and makes it good.
Number four in our top nine places to recruit players is universities.
Ah, now this is an often overlooked place, Joe. One of the strongest social attractions in uni is uni sports.
Absolutely.
Uni sports is one of the things.
And O-Weeks.
O-Weeks, going to uni sports. And for those who don't know what uni sports is, it's like the Olympics, lots of different sports all in the one place.
Massive.
Where uni students get together and compete and socialise. And it's all sports. So it could be things like, again, it's the traditional sports, cricket and football, but it's other things like ultimate frisbee and bowls, and every sport just about is represented there. And so within the unis, there's a very big university subculture of people that want to play different sports. So if you link into the unis, and when you think about unis, Joe, a lot of times unis are just a place where people from all parts of the country have come together. And they don't know anyone, so they're looking to connect. So if you can connect your club to university students through their university sports clubs, and you can just ring your local university student union, and they will put you on to the president of the respective club, and that's a fantastic way of getting a lot of members very quickly.
Number five is one that not many people would have thought of, I'd say, as a recruitment pool, and that is mothers groups.
Well, Joe, as many of our listeners will know, that I come to the radio show often with only having 4 or 5 hours sleep because I've got two daughters under two, and my wife is you know, very, very actively joined her local mother's group, and there's a whole group of mothers that have got kids that come together to socialise, because often that's their only social activities for the week. And there's no reason why that socialising has to be at a park or in a playground or in a play centre. It can be at the sports club. But all we need to do is be a little bit flexible and create a time where the mothers can go in between sleep times. I've learning is a very important time. And also potentially facilities for that will entertain the children. And then give the mothers a way of participating in your sport while their kids are being looked after, or not necessarily being looked after, could be looked after by themselves. But kids are being engaged. They're being able to do a little bit of physical exercise, because, again, that's one of the things that often mothers want to do when they after they've had children is to exercise more, to get a little bit of fitness and to recover from a motherhood or prepare for motherhood, depending on how the case may be. So if you can create an environment that's inclusive to mothers, then you've got a very loyal group of people that will really engage your club.
Number six in our top nine places to recruit players is the corporate sector.
Corporate days, Joe. Corporate days. Golf has known this for a long time, corporate golf days. But it doesn't. Lots and lots of sports lend themselves to corporate days. And what we mean by corporate day, it's where effectively the participants of an event are businesses and their clients. So a business might buy 10 tickets to come on a corporate sailing day or an archery day, or a bowls day, or something, some sort of where the sport takes on the activity, but it also introduces their clients in a social atmosphere to the sport. So look to that corporate market, and again it has many 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 benefits. It introduces new people to your sport, introduces the sport in a social environment, but in this instance it also introduces your sport to lots of potential sponsors. And I know lots of sports that have very successfully created big sponsorship portfolios off the back of their corporate days.
Number seven in top nine places to recruit players is people with disabilities.
Yeah. And we've over the last couple of weeks, Joe and our different guests have talked about engaging with all sorts of different groups within the community. And there's no group more passionate, I don't think, than people with disabilities. And most of our sports can be adjusted or altered to ensure that they're able to be participated in by people of all sorts of abilities. And people with disabilities really welcome the opportunity to participate. And when you open up your club to groups that haven't been able to participate before, it's a tremendously positive environment, and it doesn't need much change. But not only do you get those participants, but you also get their friends, their family, and their carers. So it can have a very, very strong multiplier effect of people that are participating in your club just because you've opened yourselves up to engage with different groups other than the traditional groups.
Number eight in the top nine places to recruit players is groups.
Yeah, different groups within the community. And sorry, my writing is a bit vague there, Joe, but what I'm talking about there is if I'm a country club, don't worry about what the sports is, then potential group I'm talking about in this scenario is a little bit like the mothers or the parents that are looking after children at home. Say the farmers. They've got their different characteristics. I mean, if they're dairy farmers, they're up in the morning and they're back at late at night milking the cows. So that means that those times are out. So often afternoon sporting activities are not suitable then, because they don't suit. So look at the different groups within your communities. It could be you could have farmers, or you could have shift workers, or you could have a big hospital where people are finishing early in the morning and their day is just starting, and creating competitions and creating opportunities around different groups within your community that might be more employment based or different characteristics. So look beyond age as a separator for different groups, and look to lifestyle, and how can we create opportunities for people with different lifestyles.
Okay, the last but not least is a new communities in our top nine places to recruit players.
Yeah, I think when we're talking recruitment and participation, I think it'd be remiss of us now not to to start to think about the absolute compulsion that we need to start opening up our clubs to everybody within our community. So if the community, your community's changed from the traditional white Anglo-Saxon to having different community groups, then we need to certainly open up our clubs and start to approach these different groups and invite them in into our club and into our sport. And that's many clubs that have done that in many, many sports have found some amazing, amazing benefits, Joe, that have far gone beyond any of their expectations. So new communities is certainly something that we'll explore a lot more as we go through coming weeks in the discussions we're having with our guests, because it's an area that we're very passionate about. But for the moment, it's just another area that we need to think about and potentially change our recruitment for participants and volunteers.
Thanks for joining us today. We hope you've enjoyed the podcast. If you've just tuned in and like what you've heard and you want to catch up with previous episodes or replay this one, then visit our podcast page at www.sportscommunity.com.au, where you can find all our previous episodes for download as well as show notes. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter for the latest and greatest in grassroots sports news. You can also find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. But don't just listen to the episode. Why not subscribe to our podcast feed so you get automatically updated when a new podcast is available? And give us a review so we can improve what we do. So on behalf of me, Joe Novella.
And me, Steve Pellis, thank you for making us part of your sports community.